everyone. I'm Dr. Lara Devkin, and I am joined today on this episode of Beauty Bosses by my friend, Dr. Lara Opeler, who is a cardiologist in private practice here in New York City, and she does all kinds of stuff to help us with our inner beauty. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here today. So that's kind of what I want to talk about on this episode. Some of the components of health, women's health, men's health, everybody's health, that kind of are less visible but make a huge impact on our overall wellness. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what you do.
So I am actually originally trained as an interventional cardiologist as well as a general cardiologist, but I'm currently doing general cardiology, which means I either do prevention, women that are looking to prevent a problem, make sure their cholesterol is okay, make sure they stay healthy and have a long health span, not just lifespan. And I also do cardiology in terms of helping people with symptoms. Maybe they have chest pain, shortness of breath, they've passed out, they have palpitations. Those are kind of the two camps that I work with.
Can you tell us a little bit more about this concept of health span versus lifespan? Because I think it's so interesting.
It is an interesting thing. You know, longevity is a big buzzword these days, and people want to live as long as possible. But I think, especially as a cardiologist, I can see when you get older, it's not always so fun. So I think there's a very big difference between lifespan, how long you live, and health span, how healthy you live. Are you able to do what you want to do? Are you walking around every day? Are you active? All of those things are important.
Yeah, so yeah. Important. Do you think there's a role for a healthy person in seeing a cardiologist for screening? Or is it more if you have a problem and your internist is referring you to a cardiologist where someone would want to call you?
I see both, but I would say screening is extremely important. It's very hard to know what's going on inside. And they're very simple tests and great risk stratifiers that we can do to help screen you for any type of plaque or any type of arrhythmia, you know, any type of valvular disease, structural heart disease. Just this last week, I found a patient that had an abnormal artery in their heart, an anomalous coronary artery. And we wouldn't have known if we didn't screen. I also actually just found a patient with a benign tumor in their heart, which has to come out. But again, screening is important. We usually mostly screen for cholesterol because high cholesterol is not always the same in everyone. You can have numbers that are borderline, but we have to look a little bit deeper. We have to look at Lp(a), we have to look at ApoB, we have to look at the carotid arteries and measure the wall thickness. There are a lot of nuanced things that a cardiologist does that you wouldn't get at your general internist's office.
What do you think is the most misunderstood aspect of heart health in general, or a big myth that you see out there?
I would say the most misunderstood thing is that cardiac disease is the number one killer of women. A lot of times people know men die of heart disease, but it's the number one killer of women, more than all cancers combined. So, you know, it's something that also you have to really be careful once you hit perimenopause and menopause. All of your numbers kind of skyrocket. And I always tell people, it's important to know your numbers. You should know your blood pressure. You should know your glucose. You should know your hemoglobin A1C. You should know your cholesterol numbers. Those are numbers that will follow you throughout your life, and you can actually do something about those numbers.
Yeah, it's amazing because we know our ATM PIN and our phone number and our zip code, but some of these numbers honestly make more of an impact on day-to-day life, and there's so much about health that can be measured.
Absolutely, measured and tweaked. You know, I have a lot of patients that on the outside look perfect and, you know, maybe because of you, but on the inside, they don't look so great. And we can do something about that. And I've actually never, ever had a patient die of a heart attack. You know, we can actually prevent big problems, and we can't do that without screening people. We just don't know.
Yeah. What are three actionable things that a kind of regular, so to speak, healthy person listening to this can think about doing in their regular life to improve their cardiovascular health?
Great question. One is exercise. So the recommendation is 30 minutes of continuous exercise 5 times a week. Back of the envelope in terms of what heart rate are you trying to get to, we actually have tests that can tell you and tailor exactly what your exercise should be and heart rate target should be. But back of the envelope, you want to take the number 220, subtract your age, and you want to do between 65 and 85% of that number. That's kind of the moderate exercise.
Okay, so 220, everyone do the math right now. 220, I'm doing it in my mind. 220 minus your age, minus 20. And then 65 to 85%
Yeah, that should be your zone that you're really going for when you're exercising. And again,
for both women and men, or just
for both women and men. Now we have tests. We have tests called CPETS, cardiopulmonary exercise stress tests, that can actually give you a tailored measurement of what your heart rate should be. But if you're going to do a back of the envelope, if you're not going to go through that test and all of that, that's how you should think about it.
Okay, so exercise, and what are two other things people should be doing?
Diet is obviously always a big thing. You know, there are a lot of fad diets out there. Some have, you know, been proven, some have been disproven, but I would say what most cardiologists recommend is a Mediterranean diet. You know, a lot of fish, olive oil, legumes, fruits, vegetables, that type of thing. The third, let's see, I would say, this is the hardest thing to do, but trying to decrease stress. And it's very hard, you know, especially you and I, we're moms, we're doctors, we live in New York City. But if there are things that you can do to decrease stress, that is helpful.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that remains the kind of uncharted territory where there's a lot on everyone's plate all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But being a little calm about it can probably help.
It helps a little, yeah.
What influence do you think GLP-1s is going to have on the cardiovascular health of people as a whole? Because now with medications like Ozempic and Mounjaro and tirzepatide and Wegovy, Zepbound, all these medicines out there, what's going to happen?
I actually think it's going to have a very, very profound effect. You know, some of these have been already shown to decrease cardiovascular disease by 20%. I think losing weight, we absolutely see numbers come down. We see blood pressure come down. We see cholesterol come down. We see hemoglobin A1C, which is a measurement of diabetes, come down. So I think if that's the underlying issue and we can actually fix that underlying issue, it's going to make a huge, huge impact. I don't know if we have the quantifiable numbers right now, but I think time will tell, and I think it's going to be a game changer.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for anyone listening to this podcast who's thinking about a career in medicine or cardiology in particular?
Well, my advice, and my own daughter is interested in being a doctor, I think it is the most rewarding profession in the world. When I was a little girl, my father was a cardiologist, and I would follow him around every weekend. If I wanted to see him, I had to go to the hospital with him because he worked all the time. And, you know, patients would come up to him and say, "Your father saved my life. You know, he's everything. He's amazing. I have a wonderful life now because of him." And I just thought, wow, that looks like a really good job.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I followed in his footsteps. I actually did work with him for 4 years, which was amazing. But I think it's a very rewarding career. I also think it's, in my opinion, a career that is great for a woman. You can kind of do what you want. You can work part-time and still have a real career. You could decide to share responsibilities with another person. And you'll never be disappointed in terms of how rewarding it is.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think I sort of came of age in a time when it was a big decision if you could be a woman and go into a demanding field, a male-dominated field like surgery or medicine. But I think things have changed so much that this next generation coming up, and hopefully for your daughter too, that I think they're going to face fewer obstacles and be able to be the architects of their futures a little more.
I agree totally. I mean, when I did interventional cardiology, as I mentioned, and I was the only female in the tri-state area of Maryland, Virginia, and D.C., and people would say to me, "Are you sure you want to do this? You know, you're going to get pregnant, you have to cath, you're going to be up all night in the hospital." And no one said that to a man. So I do think we've come a long way, because that was a while ago, but I just absolutely love what I do. I feel such passion for it. I always have. And I think you want to follow your passion. So listen, if you're thinking you want to be a doctor, you should really know, because as you know, it's a long road. It takes a long time.
Yeah,
it's a lot of work.
Don't become a doctor unless there's nothing else that you want to do that can make you happy.
Exactly. But if you chose the right profession and you become a doctor, there's nothing more rewarding.
Nothing. I totally agree, and I love this work and this field, and it's so special that we get to have the opportunity to have such personal and meaningful one-on-one interactions with people.
I think it's a privilege that people trust us.
Yeah.
You know, I take it as a major privilege.
When the Surgeon General spoke about how the great American epidemic now is loneliness, I think in some way a career in medicine means that you're never going to be totally lonely, because you have these deep interpersonal conversations with many people many days.
It's true. It's incredible. I think, you know, as I said, we're very lucky.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what does the future look like for you in terms of where you think cardiology is going and where you professionally are thinking about being?
Well, as I said, I'm in, you know, private practice, and I'm really very, very much enjoying it. I think cardiology is a field that has a lot of research going on. It has a lot of exciting new things going on, new procedures, new devices, new medications. And it's hard to predict what the future holds, but I think things are getting better and better. And I really deeply don't believe anyone should die of a heart attack. It just shouldn't happen. We should be able to identify the problem beforehand, and we can treat it.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because I think we take for granted this idea that heart attacks are a commonplace event, mm-hmm. But maybe they shouldn't be. Maybe we need to re-examine that.
Yes, I think we should.
What made you want to go into private practice as opposed to the other forms of medicine where you could work in a hospital or in an academic center and so on?
It's a great question. So I've kind of done it all. I started in a private practice. I worked with my father in Washington, D.C. That was for 4 years. And then when I came to New York, I joined a private practice interventional cardiology group, which was then bought by a hospital, which then became a big health system. And I found myself almost a cog in a wheel of a huge health system. And I decided it's not how I want to do it. It's not how I want to practice medicine. I really enjoy the doctor-patient relationship. I enjoy knowing my patients. I feel if I'm going to do a good job, I have to know every detail. So that's why I ended up in my own practice. And you know, it's very empowering. I feel like I'm a better doctor.
That's amazing. Yeah. It gives you the opportunity to practice medicine on your own terms.
Exactly.
With everything in the news about health insurance and the murder of the UnitedHealthcare CEO and Luigi Mangione and all of this stuff swirling around in the dialogue about insurance, do you have any thoughts about health insurance and how that impacts doctors or patients or both?
You know, it's really interesting you ask that, because my husband was the one that used to submit to our insurance.
Okay.
and I realized he wasn't submitting anything. So I, about 6 months ago, took over, and I now submit everything. And I now...
Like for your own personal...
For my own personal... Okay. You know, I also obviously help patients get certain tests approved by insurance, but on a very personal note, which I never thought about, you know, I was always on the doctor side, helping people get approved for...
Yeah, that's why I was confused.
Right. But now I see the other side, and it's astonishing. It's astonishing, the tactics and the hoops they make you jump through. And I made it my mission to jump through every single hoop. I just wanted to see what will happen. They're going to make me appeal. They're going to make me appeal again. They're going to make me talk to someone. They're going to make my doctor send more notes. I decided I'm going to do every single thing they ask.
And what happened?
We're actually like getting checks every week now. But I have to say, it was like almost a full-time job. I mean, what you had to do. From the other side, as a doctor, obviously, I do a lot of peer-to-peers. You know, they have someone that's not necessarily qualified denying tests, and you have to end up talking to a physician in the insurance company and explaining to them why you need the test. And usually they understand. I usually get things approved. But, you know, that's another hoop. You know, you have to schedule this meeting. You have to take time out of your day and all of that. So I think there is truth to these tactics. Do I think it's okay, that it's not okay to murder anyone? Of course, obviously. But I understand the frustration that people have. I really do now on a personal level.
Yeah. It's a very broken system. How do we fix it?
Oh, God, that's a whole other podcast.
I brought you on this podcast so you're going to fix American health insurance.
That's going to be a toughie.
Okay, well, we'll all keep our eyes out on it.
Yeah.
Well, where can people learn more about you, your work, your practice, and everything? Oh.
So I have a Instagram account, Lara_Obler, O-B-O-L-E-R. First name, Lara, L-A-R-A, just
spelled
like you.
The coolest way.
The correct way. And I also have a website, LaraOblerMD.com, I think. But yeah, I'm in New York City. You can look me up.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for doing this. And
thank you.
It was so helpful and educational.
So fun. Thank you.
Thanks.